I'm Bill Littlefield.
We have a lot of issues in this country that we need to deal with. We have a lot of people that are oppressed. You know, police brutality is a huge thing that needs to be addressed.
That's San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Prior to his team's preseason game on Thursday night, Kaepernick once again declined to stand during the playing of the national anthem. His story, its antecedents, and its repercussions are up first on this week's Three Stories You Should Know. Joining me are Mina Kimes of ESPN and Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello.
Thank you.
So, Craig, tell us more about Colin Kaepernick, about whom we've already heard a great deal this week. But go ahead. I'm sure you've got more to tell us.
Well, he has obviously driven absolutely everyone crazy, at least everyone who disagrees with him. And it's a selective disagreement, though, because as a baseball guy, I wasn't paying too close of attention to Kaepernick's protest. But then I remembered in 1972, Jackie Robinson wrote an autobiography. And in the beginning of that autobiography, he remembered his first World Series in 1947 with the Brooklyn Dodgers and how he listened to the national anthem. And then he thought back. And he said, as I write this 20 years later, I cannot stand and sing the anthem. I cannot salute the flag. I know that I am a black man in a white world. In 1972, in 1947, at my birth in 1919, I know that I never had it made. Colin Kaepernick's not Jackie Robinson. An America in 2016 is not the same as America in 1919, 47, or 72. But it doesn't take one of Jackie Robinson's stature or experience to see and take issue with injustice and inequality, which manifestly still exists in America. However, if you're not Jackie Robinson, I guess you're just not allowed to note that. And that is the fundamental conflict I see with the way people are approaching Kaepernick. He's saying it now instead of 30, 40 years in the past. And for some reason, that bugs people.
I think it's a really valuable comparison because so often, you know, we're able to sanitize outspoken athletes and activists once they've passed away. Another example is Muhammad Ali, you know, who just passed and people were saying, hey, a lot of the things he was saying sounded pretty similar. And putting these two men next to each other, it shows you that history is a living document and that things that happened in the past, while, as Craig said, it's not the same era and they don't happen in the same way, but many of the underlying issues, systemic racism, segregation, employment discrimination, they're still happening. So when we look at Jackie Robinson or Muhammad Ali, and then we look at Colin Kaepernick, I think we're able to see pretty clear parallels between the past and the present.
Well, I have no disagreement with that. I like the idea of putting what Kaepernick has said and done in context. And I really hope that more and more people will eventually move beyond talking about his personality and what he is or isn't. And they'll talk more about the circumstances to which he's trying to draw our attention, particularly in his case, police brutality against minorities.
Well, I just think there's a common thread when anything historically dealing with racism or oppression happens in this country. And that's that if it happened in the past, specifically when the complaint and the complainant is long dead, we'll acknowledge it. But if it's happening in the present, we tend not to.
Mina, your concern this week is with a former Heisman Trophy winner. What have you got going on there?
So this Tuesday, a 29-year-old man who has not played competitive baseball since high school held a showcase at the University of Southern California. Several media members, a few dozen scouts showed up. And by all accounts, he looked average. He ran a solid 60-yard dash, smacked a few dingers, but he struggled with off-speed pitches and couldn't really play defense. Later, he received an offer from the Bridgeport Bluefish, an independent league team. Now, none of this would be national news except for the man was, you guessed it, Tim Tebow. So Tim Tebow is obviously a polarizing figure in no matter what he does, and this was no exception. In the wake of his workout, the two predictable takes rolled in. There were the haters who argued that it was a publicity stunt. You know, Deadspin pointed out that the workout reportedly accelerated his endorsement deal. And then there were his defenders who said, hey, we shouldn't criticize a guy for pursuing his dreams. So my immediate response to this is that both sides are kind of right, but neither have really landed on what bothers people about Tim Tebow. It isn't his intentions, which may be pure or they may be cynical, but rather that his success reveals to us that sports and celebrity are more intermingled than we'd like to believe, and that none of this is really a meritocracy in the traditional sense.
Oh, I agree with that completely, in that the only reason Tim Tebow got a showcase with 40-some scouts showing up was celebrity, not sports. There are probably, I'd say conservatively, 500 to 1,000 undrafted high school or college baseball players with better baseball bona fides than Tim Tebow, who would love the chance to even have one scout take a second look at him, let alone 40.
The Bridgeport Bluefish are precisely the team with which he should be associated with. This is the same team that brought in Pete Rose to manage one game. So it is all about showcase for the Bridgeport Bluefish, and I think it's probably all about showcase for Tim Tebow, because most people who get the opportunity to work out for Major League Scouts don't feel that they need to tell the world about that workout. They just quietly go about trying to demonstrate their skills.
What's ironic about this is it reveals not only the extent of Tebow's, I guess, dreamer-ness, but also the fact that he keeps pursuing dreams that he's not quite good at. You know, obviously baseball, he's average at best. And football, you know, he's refused to play other positions. That's something that came out, actually, when this all happened, is that the Bucs, I believe, wanted him to switch positions and would have offered him a spot. And he said, no, I'm a quarterback. And he walked away from broadcasting, which he's been really good at. So he's such a perplexing figure in that way. I don't know if we'll ever really understand what motivates Tim Tebow.
At some point, perhaps we'll stop caring about what motivates Tim Tebow. No, wait, in this celebrity culture, we'll never do that. I'm sure I'm wrong. My story this week is about former swimmer Shirley Babashoff, who I spoke with several weeks ago. She won one gold medal and a handful of silver medals back in 1976 at the Olympics, and the expectation had been that she would win a lot more gold at that time. She aired her suspicions back in 1976 of the East German swimmers, pointing out that they had exceptionally deep voices and their times had improved very, very quickly without them practicing all that much. Babashoff was written off as a sore loser. She was ridiculed back at home. Of course, her suspicions eventually were borne out. This week, the California Senate introduced Resolution 88, and it requests that the International Olympic Committee give swimmers who played by the rules back in 76 the medals that they would have won if they hadn't been competing against people who should have been disqualified. Babashoff would like to have those medals. It still matters to her. I know that. She told me. So I hope Resolution 88 prevails. But I also hope that this story acquaints or reacquaints people with what was done to the women swimming for East Germany those many years ago. Some of them had no idea what the coaches and trainers were injecting them with. And some of them suffered very, very grim side effects. I hope that becomes part of the story. Mina, what do you think? Can the retroactive awarding of medals right this sort of particular wrong?
You know, it's great and it needs to happen, but nothing compares to being honored in the moment, right? And you hear a story like this, and you understand why people were so frustrated with the IOC this summer for picking and choosing with regards to the Russian athletes. Because when there's systemic abuse, if you pick and choose, it's going to keep happening again and again. And I feel like we're going to see this type of thing in the future over and over with medals retroactively taken away because the abuse isn't going away.
Coming from a baseball perspective on this, we tend to talk about this in completely the opposite way. There have often been conversations about stripping Barry Bonds of MVP awards and giving them to the next clean player that we know of. And those proposals are usually just laughed out of the room. No one thinks that's workable. No one thinks it's even necessary, including in many cases the player who we presume to have been clean. And I think part of the reason in baseball is because it is such an imperfect history that we have. It's nowhere near as documented as, say, East German swimmer abuse. But I wonder if in the Olympics we can certainly go back and know, just because the East Germans were very well documented in their cheating. But when you get into the business of undoing history, it gets a little trickier than you think. And it might make us feel good to do that. But in some ways, it might also whitewash a very spotty past.
My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been ESPN's Mina Kimes and NBC Sports' Craig Calcaterra. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.